This is episode 85 of the Angry Tech News Podcast for Friday, April 18th, 2025.
This is the Angry Tech News Podcast at angrytechnews.com. Now your host, the Angry Programmer with a mic, Ryan Bemrose.
Holy cow, it's been a long time, but Angry Tech News is back by popular demand. No, really, I mean it. Some of the regular listeners have been demanding the return of the show. Okay, so maybe the demand is not that popular. I can't say how popular some of you people are. I'm sure you've got literally dozens of followers on Insta or What's Talk or whatever social media is hip with the peeps these days. But back to my point, I'm just as surprised as you are. This show has regular listeners? In honor of the long hiatus, this is an old news episode. These are stories that were really just sitting around cluttering my browser tabs so that I'd have them open just in case I did an episode. In some cases, I even wrote up entire stories and then never got the time to do the show corresponding to the write-up. In my defense, I have had some serious technical issues to work through involving WordPress woes, a brief PayPal password scare, a lot of audio routing crap. Did you know this is the first time I've done an episode of this podcast or any podcast that I've mastered entirely in Linux? I always bounced over to Windows for that before. Or did you also know that I wrote my own soundboard program because I could not find anything in Linux that fit my needs? And yeah, I do take suggestions, but I may not use them because I wrote my own soundboard program. Anyway, all this is stuff you really don't care about. To be honest, mostly, I've just been busy. Busy with work, lazy, little bit of lazy, yeah, and busy. Did I mention busy? Yeah. From the You Are Very Valuable department, or at least your DNA is, let's start with technology company 23andMe, founded in 2006 and cleverly named for the number of chromosomes in a human DNA cell, or DNA strand, number of DNA, I'm not a biologist, I'm a tech guy. In case you don't remember, this is one of several companies that popped up right around that time where you would send a home kit for collecting DNA, then you'd spit on a stick or something, send them back your DNA, and they'd run it through some kind of proprietary computer analysis and send you back the kind of information that any half-decent genealogist could have found with a couple hours searching through public birth records. Yes, in true Silicon Valley style, 23andMe took something people have been doing for centuries and added computer algorithms to it, thus transforming it into something new and trendy and hip and worthy of those sweet, sweet investment dollars that flow around Silicon Valley almost as freely as the wine. And so millions of people jumped at the chance to send their most personal information to a company with a classic 200-page EULA and no incentive to keep that information secure. And the only insurance that the people got was that the company said they wouldn't sell that data, honest, knock on wood. To be clear, data does not get much more personal or valuable than your DNA. It has no expiration date. There's more information in there than you know or anyone else, such as, for example, your whole ethnic lineage, genetic predisposition to diseases. And DNA data is immutable, meaning that unlike a password, you can't change it if it gets breached. And in this database, it is conveniently indexed to your name, your address, and probably your browser history. Which is good, right? Because, I mean, how insanely valuable would that data be to say, oh, I don't know, law enforcement who want to compare your DNA to their long list of samples collected from crime scenes just to see if you might have been nearby so they can close some cold cases? To advertisers who want to more accurately target who to sell drugs to in one demographic group? Miracle cure-all snake oil to another demographic group? Birth control and abortions to groups that, I don't know, that they want to, you know, reduce the population of, or, you know, they want to sell a beat up F-150 if they determine that you've got a redneck lineage. Health insurance companies would love to have this information so they can raise rates or deny coverage entirely on people that they think are genetically predisposed to a particular disease. Hostile foreign powers or well-funded terrorist cells might want to this information to tailor the next super virus so that it can affect only your demographic group. And government health officials might want this so they can more accurately decide which cities and regions of the country to lock down first the next time that a common cold escapes from a biolab and the sensational media whips everyone into a panic, causing widespread mass hysteria that authoritarian tyrants can then use to justify trampling everyone's constitutional and natural rights. Boy, it's a good thing that the people running 23andMe were totally satisfied with the $99 that you gave them for doing the tests and had no reason to keep that database of DNA that they totally deleted after using, didn't they? Of course they kept it. Silicon Valley does not delete databases. Do not be naive. And they were obviously competent enough to secure the database from being breached, right? By a low-level employee with an insecure login? Just kidding. Everyone in Silicon Valley gets hacked eventually. Oh, and they were totally honorable enough not to give themselves a loophole letting them sell it later, like in the terms of service, which, yes, I did read back in the day, believe it or not. They gave themselves the right to sell that data, of course, with no option for you to opt out if just in case they ever changed their minds, which they have. As these things usually go, a significant portion of the company's DNA was breached in October of 2023, or DNA data, in a credential stuffing attack. Hackers made off with the full records of more than 7 million accounts. That data later appeared for sale on the dark web. In September, the company paid $30 million to settle, about a year later, a class action lawsuit resulting from that breach. Around the same time, there was an internal disagreement with the founder and CEO, Ann Wojcicki, and the disagreement saw most of the board of directors resign in protest over plans to take the company private. If that sounds like a stable company, you're not paying attention. Last month, the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Wojcicki announced her resignation, and 23andMe now wants to find a buyer willing to purchase the asset-rich but business plan-poor company. As part of the announcement, they insisted that any potential buyer will be required to adhere to strict user privacy standards. But that's about as enforceable as a stop sign on a dirt road. Anyway, it's a proud Silicon Valley tradition that the word of a company not to violate your trust lasts right up until the company changes hands and becomes owned by people who never made any such promises. Consumer watchdog groups and some state attorneys general have issued warnings that if you have any data in this company, you should log in immediately and go to the settings section of your account, download your data if you feel like keeping it, and then click the permanently delete all my data button on the site. And who knows? Maybe it'll take. As an aside, after writing this part up, U.S. FTC Chairman Andrew Ferguson said that he's, quote, keeping an eye on 23andMe's bankruptcy proceeding to make sure that the future owner upholds the company's privacy promises. I am still unconvinced that that's anything close to a guarantee, but I am willing to be pleasantly surprised. From the Alexa, exfiltrate my data department. Piling on the last story about personal data, this one is about the Amazon Echo device. In case you've forgotten, that is the small hockey puck-shaped piece of plastic that sits on your living room table and probably has for years, recording everything that anybody ever says anywhere in your house, and then by default sends all those recordings to Amazon to be archived forever until some government's law enforcement comes calling. Oh, by the way, any government, remember Amazon's an international company, or someone at Amazon decides to monetize it, or the database gets breached and sold on the dark web. Smart users of the device, knowing that it sends all recordings to the Death Star by default, immediately went into the device settings and changed it to process only all of those recordings locally instead, which means that rather than sending all recordings to Amazon for processing just to see if there was a command anywhere in all the bird noises, it checked the audio on the device and only pinged the mothership if there was a command, or if it detected one, or if maybe it thought maybe there was one, or if it just felt like it. Anyway, that's what the manual says it did. The Echo is a black box, so honestly, we have no idea what it was doing. Well, Amazon announced last month in an email sent to users of the device that they've removed that option. Now, all the audio will be sent to Seattle. The reason given is they added to the capabilities of the device and they have exceeded the processing ability of the CPU in the puck, which is probably true. But I certainly don't remember them asking users if people wanted those extra capabilities or if this was a trade-off the users were comfortable with. Okay, so what is the big deal with this anyway? What can they possibly do with your voice? Well, the obvious is they can blackmail you with the things they say to, that you say to your kids. And if you're anything like me, I say to my admittedly fictional kids all sorts of really terrible things that probably shouldn't be repeated. Or things that you say to your cats. I mean, I don't judge, but whatever. Or if you're a more salty individual and just want to vent in the privacy of your own home, if you say things about how much you hate your elected leaders, there are stories coming out of the UK that suggest you could be arrested for merely complaining about how much better your neighborhood was before it got overrun by people stabbing your children and killing your pets for food. To my knowledge, that's not yet happening in America, but I know a lot of you honestly believe that the current American president is capable of that level of tyranny. So beware. Of course, stepping back from the Orwellian precipice, the more likely thing that Amazon will do with your voice is to use it to train AI, which has been all the rage for Silicon Valley for the last year or two. You could be 6 levels deep in a computerized menu system one day, just trying to pay your water bill, when suddenly your own AI-generated voice comes on asking if you'd like to take a survey for a chance at a 75% cent-off coupon on dog shampoo or something. This is a violation. I didn't agree to this, you might say. Ah, but you did. When you plugged Amazon's microphone into your home internet, it's right there on page 691 of the EULA in 5-point font. How could you possibly have missed it? From the User Choice is Bad department, this last story is about, I'm only doing 3 stories, deal with it, is about every 3-letter agency's favorite new Windows feature, Windows Recall. I talked about Windows Recall in Angry Tech News number 83, which was, I believe, June of 2003, but it was only 2 episodes ago. At the time, Recall was going to go out on by default on every one of their new line of Copilot Plus PCs. After security researchers pointed out how amazingly bad an idea it is to archive everything done on the entire PC in an unencrypted database for malware to exfiltrate at its leisure, the company pulled the feature temporarily in order to make some changes. Not least, it's now supposed to be turned off by default, which is almost good enough. But the code still ships and the feature is still dormant in your OS, meaning that malware authors will need somewhere between 2 and 5 Google searches to figure out how to turn it back on in code. So, I came across this story originally from The Verge in September of 2024. Yeah, it's been a while. The power users who spotted KB5041865 for Windows 11, which added a checkbox labeled Recall to the control panel's Add Remove Programs dialog, suggesting very strongly that the feature might actually be removable. Well, as easily removable as any other Windows feature, which is to say that you can turn it off and you can even try to convince Windows not to run the code. But if you ever deviate from Microsoft's default, things in the operating system might just start inexplicably failing for no reason. And if you ever take a Windows update, it might just turn itself back on again. Which I guess now that I think about it is the default for all Windows features, whether they're turned on or off. I hate to be the one to point out that this is false hope, but have you ever heard of the side-by-side cache? No Windows feature is ever truly removable. The side-by-side cache is a neat feature developed during the Windows Vista days, where the code for every possible Windows feature is stored in a cache on your hard drive. This, by the way, was before bandwidth was plentiful. They actually shipped all of those on the CD. No, DVD. Vista was DVDs. Yeah. Just in case you want to install Hypervisor on your tablet or something. When you click the checkbox to turn on a feature, an install dialog pops up where it unspools the code from the side-by-side cache and installs it on your OS. Better, I suppose, than a silent enable switch. You might spot the install dialog and accompanying flurry of HDD activity, but it's not that much better. The sneaky malware usually runs while you're sleeping anyway. But The Verge found something else, and in an unexpected case of actual journalism, they asked Microsoft about the ability to uninstall Recall. The reply from a senior project manager in Windows, "Well, we are aware of an issue where Recall is incorrectly listed as an option under the Turn Windows Features On or Off dialog, but this will be fixed in an upcoming update." Oops! I guess it was just an accident. Microsoft didn't mean to give the user any control or even the illusion of it. Yeah. Okay. What you just heard, I wrote up months ago. But you, as the listener, may have probably noticed, I haven't done an AT in a while, so I almost didn't include this because the news is this old. But then I ran across a Microsoft blog post only this week, KB5055627, and the Associated Post includes a section called Recall Preview. They haven't given up. It's available in the release preview channel for Windows 11 24H2. Microsoft has reworked the feature a bit to address some of the more egregious problems with it, namely that people don't like it spying on them when they didn't ask it to, and researchers quickly found exploits where other users on the machine could access the data. So, to quote from the article, "To use Recall, you will need to opt in to saving snapshots, which are images of your activity, and enroll in Windows Hello to confirm your presence so only you can access your snapshots." Okay, yes, I'll give Microsoft a little bit of credit. Opt-in is a very good step. I'm glad they did that. Let's put aside the sheer and utter corporate boneheadedness that it would take to think even for a moment that it should be any other way, and congratulate them on eventually realizing that this feature should in fact be off by default. The Windows Hello bit, though, I'm not so sure about. Hello, in case you missed it, is Microsoft's new authentication system. Well, new in Windows 11. It's their solution to going to a passwordless future. And by the way, to really think of what I hear about these new authentication, passwordless authentication systems, go all the way back and listen to Angry Tech News number 3. Hello has three options for authentication: facial recognition, fingerprint, or PIN. The first two use biometrics, which is a fad that has all but taken over corporate authentication schemes these days. In general, I dislike using biometric authentication because, unlike a password, you can't just change out your face or fingerprint if it gets compromised. In addition, there are a lot of very legitimate situations in which a person might need true anonymity or multiple accounts. These are not possible with biometric authentication. But I guess the ship on biometrics has pretty much sailed. Thanks to products like the iPhone, people are totally sold on the convenience of it all, and most people do not understand or care what they've given up for it. Starting in Windows 11, Microsoft is pushing Hello very hard. Honestly, I'm not even sure if it's possible to use an old-style password anymore. I've heard reports that it's not possible to log in without a Microsoft account, so why would they let you use a password? They say that Hello is much more secure than just a password, which is at least true for the remote attacker threats they're focusing on. See, in Windows Hello and the various passwordless things, your actual full authentication token is an extremely long cryptographic key. Most of this is stored in the computer's trusted platform module. The last tiny bit of the token is built from your face or fingerprint or PIN, which is tacked onto the end of the key and sent off to the TPM, the trusted platform module. By the way, few people have ever asked the obvious question, trusted by whom and trusted to do what? The Trusted Platform Module, where some black box code that no independent developer or security researcher will ever be allowed to read, debug, or inspect any of the code, will do some cryptographic crunching for a while and spit out a decree as to whether or not you're allowed to use the computer that you bought and paid for. Of course, the kind of people who would trust Microsoft enough to turn on a feature like Windows Recall are also very likely to trust Microsoft with their biometric identity and universal login credentials, so this is probably just my personal paranoia talking. Anyway, once you opt into Recall and turn it on, or when some malware turns it on, the blog post doesn't address that scenario, it happily saves pictures of everything that ever happens on your desktop. Apps, games, bank accounts, crypto wallets, porn, and feeds it into the AI built into your Copilot Plus PC to crunch, and sometime later you can ask it a question about what you were looking at, and in true AI fashion, it will give you an answer, which is usually right, like 80% of the time, when it's not hallucinating or distracted looking at your porn collection. Seriously, why would you even have that in there? Angry thanks to every single one of you who has donated to Angry Tech News over the long hiatus, just hoping that someday it will appear again. Y'all are hopelessly optimistic, but I love every single one of you. Unfortunately, that whole PayPal password thing I need to fix, so I don't actually know who has donated. I will come back to that soon. Angry Tech News is produced on the value for value model. We don't take sponsors, we don't play ads, and we do not charge you to listen, but we're funded by your donations. If you received some value from listening to this show and you think I deserve some value for making it, and let's be honest, only if you think there will be another ATN and maybe you'll get any more value before the year is out, because let's face it, if I can't get back up to at least monthly show, I do not deserve your support, then please send some value back. Go to angrytechnews.com and click on the donate button. Send what you think this episode was worth to you, whether it's $5, $50, or whatever your exfiltrated data on the black market is worth for you. That's it for now. I'm Ryan Bemrose, the angry programmer with a mic. I'll be back next time with more Angry Tech News. I promise.
This has been Angry Tech News with the angry programmer, Ryan Bemrose, at angrytechnews.com. Stay angry. Stay angry. Stay angry.